Now, we've got Denny Widler from the Nine Network coming up shortly. Now, Lozer, I know a topic you've been pretty passionate about, and I heard Phil Gould on 100% Footy talking about it last night as well. So, Brian To'o, the New South Wales winger, has declared his allegiance to Samoa for the World Cup. And on the text line here, hey, fellas, just wanted to know Loz's opinion on players playing for their state. They're not playing for Australia, but their country of origin, a.k.a. Brian To'o. Regards, Joseph has sent that one through. Now, Gus pretty much has the alternate view to you, Loz. He thinks it's absolutely... In fact, he thinks anyone who can't see that origin and international footy are so far apart is brain dead, I think was the term he used on 100% Footy last night. But Brian To'o, the New South Wales winger, now going and saying he's going to play for Samoa at the World Cup.
Yeah, I like the fact that these players want to make themselves available for Samoa and Tonga, and I think it's revitalised international football. But I still stand on my belief that if you're playing state of origin, you make yourself available for Australia. And if you miss selection in Australia, then you are entitled then to go and play for one of these developing nations. But I think your priority and what you should be making sure of is that you're first and foremost available to play for New South Wales or Queensland and then go and play for Australia. Because I just don't see why or how you would want people that are going to represent Tonga or Samoa choosing to do that is great, but I don't think they can have the opportunity to play state of origin, is that's where their allegiance lies. For me, state of origin is about representing your state and then going on and playing for Australia and testing yourself in that environment and being able to say that you're the best in your position for New South Wales and you are the best player in Australia. I'm trying to work out why you want to see state of origin have players from New Zealand, Tonga, Samoa play in it, and then go and represent their country rather than representing Australia. I don't understand that. I think it's great that they declare themselves available for Kiwis, or Tonga, or Samoa, or Fiji. I think that's tremendous, and that makes international football strong. And that's why international football is there. But state of origin, for me, is a different concept altogether. It's very unique. It's about New South Wales and Queensland and then the opportunity to go on and be selected in an Australian side. And if you miss out on selection, then you are able to go and play for one of those nations. But as I see it, I think you always should be available to play for Australia first and foremost.
Okay, about to join us, fresh from his hour and a half stint on the tarmac last night. He would have loved it. Channel 9 reporter Denny Widler's next. And that's a portion of Denny's story on Nine News last night. Morning, Denny.
Morning, gents. Yeah, what about that? The Queen wants to stay in touch with PVL.
Just text or over Instagram?
Oh, mate, maybe direct phone. When she's got an issue in the family, maybe she can call PVL. he can fix things. I don't know if he can fix that, but...
She's got an Instagram account?
Not sure. I don't follow her. I might check it out, though.
She'd follow you.
Yeah, Pop, what are you rating Widler?
I haven't seen Widler
Denny,
for a while.
Pop's rating Pooble today.
Rating?
Yeah.
Widler, he's a strong 7.5, D. Widler, I reckon.
You happy with 7.5, Denny?
I'll take a 3.
Yeah, you're a strong 7.5.
3 out of 10.
Don't undersell yourself.
My maximum.
Nah, he goes up a few as well. Good father. You get a couple extra being a good dad as well.
He's over 6 foot, aren't you, Denny?
Just on. What are we basing this on?
Just my opinion.
Bit of pups, you know, whether you're how tall you are, good looking.
Yeah.
Fit, you know,
healthy.
Fit, healthy.
You get like bonus.
On the market, off the market.
You get
all
bonus
types of
points
things.
Like Gutho gets bonus for being captain of para. You get bonus for being a good dad. So I just try and find a few little.
So, Pup, you're obviously the Bo Derek of this thing. You're the 10th.
No, I reckon I sit at about, I'm retired, so you lose that point. I'll probably sit at about a 7. I'll give myself a 7. Yeah, I'll give myself a 7. Yeah, I've got room
for
improvement.
I've given myself an 8.5.
Yeah, but I'm not surprised about that.
Oh, wow.
I'm giving you a 9. I'm giving Lodge a 9 as well. You know, you're about a 7.
Denny, well, what out of 10 do you give the 6 again situation? What does he get at the moment?
Well, look, it's getting a 0 from a lot of people, isn't it? People are over it, and I think that the end of that game really angered a lot of people, obviously angered the Raiders. And, you know, Laurie, I remember you were very wise about all this. You said you're going to reserve your judgment because people were absolutely loving it to start with. Remember, we've seen this sort of fast footy, no wrestle, and you were sitting back and, you know, quite wisely, I probably was very much in favour of it at the start, but you sort of said, look, just give it some time till the coaches work it out. And, Laurie, I think they've worked it out.
Yeah. They have, Denny. They have. And it's one of these ones now where when you're leaving it to the referee with their discretion, I think we're going to get more drama as the season goes on and the bigger the games. Because, you know, you're going to have teams testing the patience of a referee. And now with this being at the forefront of their minds this weekend, are we going to have a crackdown on it? Are we going to see them referee it differently this weekend compared to last week? I would assume yes.
That word makes me curl up and getting want to go in a corner. No more crackdowns, please.
Do you think there will be this weekend?
Well, there could be. You wouldn't rule it out.
Yeah, and I think they will do it because there's only 4 games this weekend.
Laurie, how long have I known you? Since about 87?
I've known you for a long, long time.
Like, and that in that time, how many times do you reckon the referees have been bagged and the game's bagged?
Every couple of times a year.
Do we have to just accept that it's not perfect and realise that there's going to be errors? And, you know, no matter which system we get, there are going to be, there's humans involved, there's going to be mistakes. I remember, you know, 6 weeks ago, we're talking about death threats for referees and how we shouldn't even mention them. And how the media are going to take the stance of, oh, we're not going to bag. Mate, it's back. It's open slather again.
Yeah.
You know, we just forget. We're so short-sighted and small-minded in a lot of the things that the way we report on the game and cover the game and view the game. And I get it. There's emotion and passion involved. But anything we do, I don't know if it's going to be perfect. I didn't like the wrestle. I remember that.
Yeah. And a lot of people, Denny, didn't like 2 referees either.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people saying, well, you need to go back to 1 referee, and then at the start...
Now we want 2 refs.
Now we want 2, but...
Bring them back, that was fine, remember?
We could go back through it. But I don't know, and you know what they're like, Denny. Coaches are very smart. Whatever rule change you make, they will exploit it. They might exploit it straight away, but eventually they find ways around the rule book.
Well, they coach to cheat, don't they? I mean, like, they're trying to...
Well, yeah, you do. Yeah? You coach to get every advantage you can get.
Yeah. It's all about the loophole. It's all about taking advantage of the situation. It's all about exploiting either a weakness in the opposition or exploiting a weakness in the official.
Yeah.
And we just have to... I know it's not perfect. I know... Look, with the 2 refs, I asked the Landys about that yesterday, and he's adamant it's going to be 1 ref. He said when we got rid of the other ref, we put them on the sidelines, and now we've in fact got 3 refs, and they're all watching. But we're still seeing mistakes, and the bunker's terrible. I think the word that everybody is starting to come back to is common sense and being able to understand the game. And that's what we don't see enough of. I think that people have said that the referees are too robotic, and maybe there's some truth in that. And maybe like Ricky said, it takes courage. And unfortunately, I have never been in that position where I have to make that call, but it does take courage to make a call, like to blow a penalty in that situation or put someone in the bin. Like in Origin, you know, that was a big call. You know, people weren't happy with that either when Kafusi got sin bin. And, you know, there is a case that's what ruined Queensland, because they were ahead at that point, and in the second half they had nothing. They didn't score another point. So, you know, it's just so difficult. We're always going to blow up. I'm not saying I've got an answer to any of it, but the way that I quizzed Volandis about it yesterday, he is a huge fan of the 6 again. He hates the wrestle. He thinks that the wrestle was terrible in the game. He says the fans are on his side, and he's going to stick to his guns. So, Peter Volandis has made a lot of decisions. I don't agree with all of them, and I don't know if I even agree with this one. But he's the one who's setting the tone and setting the pace. And you'll find that a lot of people are in favour of what Peter Volandis has done. So. It's just a really difficult situation.
What about this New South Wales team, buddy, for Game 3? What are your thoughts?
Strong. I mean, like, I liked it when they picked it for Game 2. I do think Payne Haas is a big out. I interviewed him straight after the game in Perth, and he said something to me which I probably should have picked up on. So I said, look, this is your body's getting pretty damaged here. And he said, look, I've got to start to look after myself and my club. And I wonder whether that's had a bearing. Like, I wonder if the Broncos have been in his ear in a way, saying, "Listen, you know, you've got the contract here. You've got to perform for us." I wonder if they. I'm not saying I know, but I'm just saying the way he spoke to me after the game. I wonder whether anyone leaned on him and said, "You know, we need some value out of you. We need you to rest." And he was getting injection in at least one of his shoulders to play. He banged his foot up pretty badly, so he's in a moon boot after the game. And I think he's a big out. I can't say I've watched Jordan McLean closely enough to say how well he's been going. I know that the last 2 months or so he's been really consistent and strong, and he's a monster of a bloke. He is huge. Like you stand next to him, and you don't see the sun. He's a big boy, and there won't be any. Lack of work ethic or vigour or toughness when it comes to him. But I don't know whether he's got the same motor that Payne Haas has had. So that to me is, I mean, I know there's been a lot of talk about the centres and things like that, but to me that's pretty significant, losing a forward of his nature and, Payne Haas' nature. And then we don't have, of course, Daniel Saifidi in any sort of conditional form to play for New South Wales. So we're a bit light up front, but we handled it pretty well as a state in Perth.
Tell us a bit about what you wrote about in your column in the Sun Herald on Sunday about 3 minutes, basically, that the Blues hierarchy will focus on and how they dismantled Queensland in Origin 2.
Yeah, Loz, you'd probably be someone who would subscribe to something like this. The Blues weren't getting carried away about the Cleary tries or the long passes or the great kicking. They focused on a 3 minute period from about the 56th minute, where Cleary put in a really good kick, which was almost a 40-20. They held Queensland down in their territory, and then they managed to bustle them into error and then score a try through Jerome Luai. And it was the work ethic and the pressure they put on the Queenslanders in that period, which they're going to really want to reproduce. You know, I know it's a cliche. To talk about one percenters and these sort of things, but those 3 minutes are what the Blues are going to watch when they clip up highlights of the game. Good kick chase, trapping Ponga in goal, and then exploiting Nanai out wide and Gagai through a hole, which I'm sure they're going to aim at again in this next game.
Yeah, I totally agree, Danny. I thought New South Wales, it was a very professional display in the second half, and by that I mean they had them on the ropes, but they didn't do anything silly. That they didn't sort of start moving the ball sideline to sideline and getting frantic with their play, knowing that the opposition were a bit fatigued and tired. They actually kicked, they chased, they made their tackles, got them working it off their own line, and then they pounced through the middle, and that's what I love to see. Rather than them losing their way. And that was as controlled a second half as I've seen from a halfback. And I think that's what impressed me with Nathan's game, because in the first half, you know, he was a little bit quiet and they were putting him under pressure and he came up with a couple of good plays. But it was in the second half where he got them on the front foot, put them under pressure, but then he went on with it. And that's what I thought was a mature display from a young halfback who's still only 24 years of age. And that's what you're looking for, rather than this, you know, confident player that just went, well, you know, I'm going to start throwing cutout passes and I'm going to start chipping over the top and doing the flashier plays. They just kept it simple, professional, and they did the job so well.
Professional is a word. And I also think that when I say Yeo starts to come more into the game and play his role that he likes to play at Penrith, and that gave Nathan a bit of breathing space and breathing room and enabled him to be that professional player that you're talking about. And he can't be underestimated. And while ever he's in the side, he's a huge edge for New South Wales. Just his calmness, his ball playing, his ability to understand and execute the game plan, he allows Nathan to, he takes a lot of pressure off him. And yes. I think that Queensland, he didn't really come into his own for the first, I didn't think for the first 30 minutes of the game. I thought they were a little bit clunky at that time. And I do think we can't get carried away by the size of the victory. You know, it was a cakewalk in the second half, but until that sin binning, that Queensland were ahead. And I thought New South Wales were a little bit, you know, like I said, clunky and not coordinated. And I do think we have to be a little bit wary of all that. And I'm sure that Freddie's going to make that point. Like the boys got together last night for a bit of a drink and stuff. But I think once they put their game faces on from this afternoon, I think they're going to see that sort of that video clip I told you about. They're going to be told about the fact that, you know, Queensland were ahead, and that, you know, the sin binning obviously helped them. So I don't think that the Blues are, you know, a lot of people were really celebrating that win, and rightly so, because it was a tremendous win. But with internally, I don't think they're anywhere near as buoyant as everybody else.
Now, are you surprised to see Matt Lodge playing in Sydney at the Roosters?
He's wanted to play there for a while, you know. I do think it's a risk. And I'm not saying that because of Matt Lodge's history in New York. I think it's more to do with his character. I've talked to a lot of people about Matt Lodge. And they still say he's got ability as a footballer. There is no question about that. But he rates himself very highly as a player. And the Roosters will not tolerate someone who's too big for their boots. I'm not saying that necessarily what Matt Lodge is, but what I'm saying is that he's got to fit into their system. He's an opinionated individual who can, through his opinion, potentially be divisive. But I think the Roosters know that, and I think they're going to have to get on top of that. They've done their research. They know what they're getting. But on the plus side, they're getting a big middle forward who can take an aggressive style of football to the opposition, and he can target a leader in the other side and give them absolute hell on the field. And that's what they need. That's what the Roosters have been missing. Because I think I've been saying it for most of the year. I think the Roosters are, if they're not the most disappointing team of the year, they're not far off it. Their performances just haven't matched up to their roster, and there's no hiding from that. And I think that there is pressure on that club at the moment, and it's probably a real wake-up call to some of the Roosters forward that they're having to import Matt Lodge, who, let's face it, he hasn't been a smash hit everywhere he's gone. So it's a risk. Oh, I think it's a risk.
Now, just having a look at your own Instagram account, Denny, and who bench pressed more this morning, yourself or Sonny Bill?
Look, you know, if you think I can even lift one millionth of what Sonny Bill can lift, you're sillier than I thought, Mido. Mate, I just happened to bump into him. He's up here on a family holiday, and he's staying in the same hotel as the Blues, and, you know, he's still got his boxing career to, you know, focus on. I'm just trying to put one foot in front of the other at the moment. So, you know, he was training hard. I was just, you know, sitting on the bike and, you know, Instagramming. Nothing real.
Thanks.
Nothing real about my training session.
No, I've seen you train hard. Good on you, Denny, mate. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Denny Weidler there from the Nine Network. Plenty of time for your calls after the 8:30 news with JR. Keep them coming. 13:53:53. Nick Kyrgios and Alia Tomjanovic fortunately through to the last eight at Wimbledon. Unfortunately, Alex de Minaur and Jason Kubler were beaten overnight. And in the cricket, we're heading into a A pulsating finish at day five at Edgbaston later tonight with England. 119 short of what would be a famous triumph against India. 7 wickets in hand. They're chasing 378 to win the Test match. And at the close of day four, they had reached 3 for 259. Joe Root not out 76. Johnny Bairstow not out 72. So they've put on 150, these two. And you've got Ben Stokes, the captain, still to come. And Stokes 4 for 33. Gee, I'll tell you what, considering some of their triumphs in that Test series against New Zealand, Clark, he seems to be a bit of steel under the new regime, the McCullum-Stokes regime. Just a few early fingerprints that they might be onto something, the Poms.
Well, they're playing with confidence, aren't they? They've got Joe Root, who's in terrific form as the number one Test batsman in the world currently. You've got Johnny Bairstow, who I think scored 4 or 5 centuries this year, this summer, or this calendar year. And Ben Stokes, who's a genius. He's taken over the captaincy. So I think what Stokesy and Brendan McCullum have done, probably just given these players a lot of confidence to go out there and play their natural game. You know, Johnny Bairstow is a good example. Technically, he mightn't be the greatest, but he's got as much talent as anyone. He hits the ball clean. He's got all the shots. He plays in a really aggressive, positive manner. And Stokesy and Brendan McCullum play a similar brand. So they've probably just given the likes of him, you know, that confidence to go and play with freedom. Don't be too concerned about if you get one early and nick it, so be it. When you get in, back yourself, take the game on, you know, and try and dominate. So, yeah, they're off to a good start. And I've got to say, if they're ever going to win, if they win this Test match, it'll go down as one of their best wins from, you know, where they've come from. But more importantly, if they are going to win a Test match like this, it's right now. You got, like I say, Joe Root, number one batter in the world in terrific form. Bairstow, loving scoring hundreds at the moment. And Stokesy, you give him a chance to win his team a game. He does it regularly. So if you're India, you got to go. You got to try and get 2 wickets before this second new ball, I reckon, is the key. And then the second new ball rips through the tail for not too many. But they've got to find a way to break this partnership in that first half an hour.
Loz, plenty of significant reports in the AFL world today. Now, in Melbourne, reports suggest that GWS is on the move big time to try and lure Alistair Clarkson, the Hawthorn multiple premiership winning coach, or former Hawthorn coach. And he's previously indicated, Clarkson, that he doesn't really want to rebuild. He wants a group that he feels like he can win a flag with. So there'd be a real nod to the Giants if they could get him. There's no doubt about that. There's also some reports indicating that Dustin Martin could leave Richmond at the end of this season. And it's always been indicated that if he was to leave the Tigers, Sydney is all but certainly his destination. More than likely the Swans, but no doubt GWS would love to make a play at Dusty as well. Imagine GWS could get Dustin Martin and Alistair Clarkson to the club next year, although the Swans will have a big say with Dustin Martin.
That'd be a double whammy, wouldn't it, if they could get both those players. Well, that player and coach, Alistair Clarkson's proven himself to be a legend of the coaching industry. And Dustin Martin, what more can you say? Three Norm Smith medalist medals, you know, best player on ground in the grand final, and continues to do amazing things. And I think it'll happen. I definitely think there's a bigger chance of Dustin Martin coming to Sydney than Alistair Clarkson. Mm-hmm. I think that he's made it quite clear, Dusty, that he wants to move to Sydney. He likes Sydney. He likes the fact that he can get around here and do his own thing rather than being in that fishbowl down there in Melbourne. He's still recognisable, of course, but up here in Sydney, I don't think it'll be as much scrutiny on him. And then Alistair Clarkson, I mean, if that's their number one choice and he thinks that the Giants are a chance of winning the competition in the next couple of years, and, you know, you look at some of those other teams that he's been associated with, you know, North Melbourne, you know, they look as though they're going to take a bit of time to rebuild. We're unsure of what, you know, the Suns are going to do with Stuart Dew up there on the coast, but I think he'd be wonderful here in Sydney, give them a presence out there in Greater Western Sydney. And, you know, if they could get Dustin Martin as well, wow, what a duo that'd be.
Now, just on Nick Kyrgios, it wasn't all completely
quiet.
I've
just read it.
In his win overnight. So he had what was it, red shoes
yeah.
and a red cap. So red, that breaks Wimbledon. So you've got to be in all white at Wimbledon.
You've got to be majority white. He walked on, when you walk into the arena, so he walked onto the court with bright red Jordan shoes on. And then when he did his interview afterwards, he had a red Nike cap on.
Oh, okay. So he didn't wear those during the match. Okay, I see. He's walked on court with them.
But it was more the questioning in the press conference afterward. They asked him, because he was saying the media's onto him and he gets criticised and bagged, and one of the journalists said, well, you know the rule, the dress regulations at Wimbledon, why would you go and break them? Why would you wear bright red shoes and a bright red hat into an environment where, you know, the rules have been there for such a long period of time? Why would you do that? And his answer was, because I do what I want.
Yeah, and he eventually said, keep doing you then, champion, to the reporter. Oh, we've got, give us a call, by the way, 1353 53. Jeff, morning, Jeffrey.
Hello, Gerard. Hello, my friend Clarky, and hello to the other bloke.
Hello, Jeffrey. How are you, buddy?
How are we? I'm fine, thanks. Just before I give my rating on you three, just what rating was given to your sidekick, Snorky, this morning?
I gave myself an 8.5.
You've obviously got windows and not mirrors at home.
Mate, I looked at myself this morning. I was quite happy.
8.5. That's a big cause.
You're having a lend to yourself. Anyway,
No. You've got to have self-confidence.
Hey, Clarky. Yes. Loz.
Yeah.
You know I like you. But seriously. Mate, your nose. That takes four off it already. Anyway,
start with -4, you reckon?
No, but I rate myself as a 12, though, so I'm thinking if you take that off, that leaves me with 8. That still leaves me as an 8.
Well, don't try and be funny, mate, because you're not. Anyway, just before I give my rating to you three, just Matthew Lodge, I heard Danny Wilder say that he's very opinionated. And I understand that everybody has an opinion, right? We all have one. But considering his history, wouldn't you think, and I'm only talking about if his opinion is on rugby league and certain clubs and so forth, wouldn't you just learn to keep your mouth shut and just get on and play football and try and win the people over, the supporters? Wouldn't that make more sense?
Oh, yeah, but then if he's getting interviewed and he didn't give anything, Jeff, people would be saying, oh, he's hiding something. He's not being himself. He's being gagged.
No.
They can't. Some of them, sometimes they can't win, mate.
Yeah, no, I understand that. But apparently he's very opinionated within the group and so forth. And I have no issue with that. But, mate, get on with it. Considering his history, get on with it. You know,
yeah, no, I agree with that. I think he's got a point to prove, and just get out there and play and let your footy do your talking. I don't know whether he would feel comfortable being in front of the media, because he knows where the questions are going to go all the time, and he's going to be consistently reminded about off-field behaviour. But I think the Roosters, what they did was just get him out there, because if they don't, then they're accused of hiding him and not letting him speak. But I do understand your point and get it, where if you've had a lot of issues, and some issues, arising from, off-field behaviour, then you just want to put your head down and work hard and not speak to anyone and just let your actions do the talking.
All right, Jeff, what did you want to rate Clarkie?
Okay, well, Clarkie, I love Clarkie. I've got a man crush on Clarkie. He's definitely between an 8 and a 9. Definitely. Gerard.
Apparently, 10 or 11.
Apparently from what I've heard, you're okay with the lady. So I'm going to give you about a 7 or an 8.
Oh, he's definitely pants man. You're ladies man, for sure. What? You are. Loz, you are.
Loz,
definitely.
Jeffrey, yes. Mate. I'm interested.
Loz, what would you give me?
No, that's a loaded question. So you go first.
Well, mate,
and then I'll give my assessment.
Okay, I reckon you're about a 6, right? 6 or 7, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you got your nose done properly the first time, right, and you straightened it, I'm telling you, you could be a male model.
Mate,
and I don't like you, Loz, and I'm being dead. You are a very, very handsome man. Take that nose off.
Just the nose,
you reckon? Yeah, you know what, Jeff? I like that feedback, because I think there's some truth in that. And I like people that speak the truth. So are you saying, just to put you on the spot here now, if I go and get the Hooter done, reshaped, all right, I can push my way into a nine?
There's no question. There's no question, because Snorky, have a look where your nose is. It's front and centre. Like, it is the biggest Hooter I've ever seen.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to go and play around with my nose. I'm going to have a look. Put some, George Clooney noses on my face, or a Brad Pitt nose, and just see what I come up with.
You'd need a sledgehammer to fix yours.
Yeah, well, surely you're not doing nose surgery again, Loz.
Don't tell fibs.
No, I'm not telling fibs. Well, I'm rating myself higher than you, so if you've given yourself a six, I've got to give you a five and a half.
You're rating yourself higher
than me. Well, mate, you're short, you're bald, and you're fat.
That's a good combo.
I'll tell you what.
Have I left anything off, Jeff?
You've just ruined Jeffrey. Jeff for the day.
He's gone. He's out.
Jeffrey.
Hey, he's gone to the clinic.
Good on you, Jeff. Thanks for the call, mate.
Oh, dear.
Oh, Loz, the eighth wonder of the world. Dez, morning to you.
Good morning, boys. Loz, I'm ringing you for my sick bed, mate, but I'm old-fashioned. I don't get man flu. I just got a head cold. But I had to ring in. Hey, by the way Nick Curious, maybe we'll call him Nick Curious, because he's a very curious chap, isn't he?
He certainly is. He does things his own way.
Does. And I think that red stuff's like a red rag for a bull. I think he's doing it on purpose to him.
You might be right there, too.
I heard Danny Wider, but I was going to get to tell you this. I rang up about an hour ago, but it was hard to get on. This is to the New South Wales supporters, which I'm one. Not the team, not Freddie, not Brandy Alexander. That scoreline is irrelevant in the second game. It's an aberration.
Yep.
And that game was wrecked. As soon as they put Kafusi in the bin, I texted to my brothers and nephews and said, well, that's that game gone. And, you know, I'm not saying that Queensland always try, but I watched it in the second half. It was almost like they said, well, you may as well lose by 32 as lose by 10. And I think they had their minds already set on the third game because they didn't go and play at home.
Well, I know they were buggered with all the defence that they were doing. And I think New South Wales, they found their rhythm. And once you find your rhythm in a big game like that and the opposition are off, you can lose your way quickly. I'm like you. This game up there in Queensland will not be played the way it was in Perth. It'll still be fast, it'll be quick, but I don't expect New South Wales to assert their dominance the way that they did. I think it'll be tighter. I think Queensland, when they review that video, they will be shocked with some of their efforts, and I think Billy will put them on notice that, you know, this is bigger than an individual here. This is your reputation on the line. It's the state's reputation, and I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt with some of those performances. I think you should see a tougher Queensland team, but I still think New South Wales, I think if they can handle the ball and start well, I think they can get the job done. I wouldn't expect it to be a blowout scoreline in this game.
Good on you, Dez. Thanks for the call. We got Sheldon. G'day, Sheldon.
Good morning. How are we?
Yeah, really well. Thanks, mate.
That's right, buddy.
What would you like to talk about?
Yeah, I just wanted to give Laurie a bit of a wrap and thank him very much for his coverage of our reunion that we're having this weekend down here in Eden on the far south coast.
Well, it sounds like a big weekend, Sheldon.
Yeah, it's going to be. We had a lot of success over the many, many years. We celebrated three premierships, 82, 92, and 2002. And out of those three sides, we had Peter Kelly involved with us back in the 81, 82 season. Then we had Stewie Ray for coaches in 92. And then a fellow called Mark. I've forgot Mark's name. Mark Gleeson, who coached our 2002 side, so it's going to be a huge weekend here.
And you know how many of those boys from all those sides are getting back there, mate?
Yeah, pretty good. Obviously, the 82 side, which I've had the opportunity to play, and we've lost one of our members of that side, and a couple of other boys aren't real well. So I'm looking around probably 8 or 9 in that side out of the 13. The 92 side, I think we've got about 14 out of that side, which is really great.
Wow.
And the 2002, I think, was probably about 10 or 11 out of that as well. So it should be a big, big weekend. And we got a home game down on the our old ground that we stopped playing on back in 1997 when we moved out to the new ground. We're going back down there, which is down near the beach. So it'll be a big weekend for the a lot of the old supporters who were down there for many, many years watching.
And can you, is it Hippie Corner?
It is Hippie Corner, mate, yes. It
was quite Hippie Corner. Tell me what happens in Hippie Corner.
Well, mate, it's hard to sort of tell everybody over the airwaves. But anyway, back in the day in Hippie Corner was we had amazing supporters, just incredible. It was just one area right down the far end of the ground. And there was, you'd be playing there and we'd always gravitate to that corner, and that's where we scored a lot of our tries and that so forth. But any time you went behind the goalpost, you had got this really nice whiff of a certain...
yeah, the air was different.
The air was a little bit different. Anyway, you appreciated that wonderful bloody aura down there, and it was one of those things that created, even ended up in the post. I think back in the 80s or the late 90s, there was this idea that was written by Roy Masters that the entire club was funded by Hippie Corner, who obviously would sell marijuana and get money into the club, which never happened, obviously.
Yeah.
But it was a really good story, and that went sort of really big back in the day. And I know it upset a few of the local punters who actually wrote to the Daily Telegraph and had a letter on the third page, which was really interesting. But, yeah, no, the history's great. A lot of great support down in Eden. And we've had an amazing history over a long period of time. Since 1977 to 2011, I think we've played in 17 grand finals over a 34-year period and won 12 of them. So, and I think we've won 18 since 1946. So it's been a great, great history for such a small town, which is around about 3,000 people. So it's just been amazing to be involved with.
Good on you, Sheldon. Really appreciate the call, mate, and enjoy that weekend there at Eden.
No, I just want to send a big cheer out to Jackie too, which is Laurie's sister, who's got a business down here. She obviously contacted Laurie for us, and we really do appreciate her contribution as well, and look forward to catching up with her on the weekend.
Good on you, Sheldon.
Good on you, Sheldon.
Thanks so much, mate. And just a reminder of the biggest event from overnight, Joey Chestnut has won his 15th Nathan Hot Dog title, hot dog eating contest title in 16 years. 15th in 16 years. 63 dogs.
What a record.
He consumed overnight and won by 20, I believe. So,
just scroll down a bit, Minnow. Have a look at those hot dogs there, all in the bowl. Oh, my God.
Yeah, they're all in the guts now. So there you go. Good on you, Joey Chestnut.
Yeah, go the Chestnut. Bit of sauce, surely.
Dave Stanley, warning to you.
63. Look, I'm good on the tooth, but fair dinkum.
In 10 minutes.
63. And, boys, it's got to... Look, I know it's early in the morning, but those 63 have got to go somewhere. What's doing after this? Or do they there's obviously... He doesn't walk around with 63 hot dogs in his
body. No, Loz reckons he goes for a few beers afterwards to celebrate.
Surely not, Loz. But don't they drink... there's some sort of American drink they have as well, don't they, Mido? Like, at the same time? Is it like some sort of...
What do you mean?
American drink? What, water?
No, it goes in, comes out. No, because I remember this time last year we were in lockdown, right, and we were flicking through and it came up on ESPN, and is it some sort of, like, I don't know, lemonade, or they had some sort of drink there with them that they had to... Or maybe that was an entirely different competition. There were these people sculling, like... gallons of homemade lemonade or something. I mean, they are an odd bunch, aren't they?
I don't mind a hot dog, but I can't... They dip it in water. That part I can't deal with.
Oh, maybe that's
soggy
what
soggy bread.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't deal with that. I'm dry-reaching thinking about it.
Oh, no. How does he train for this? What, does he just knock it off 63 every month leading up to it?
Get some cheese, some onion, some sauce on there and enjoy it. Just enjoy it. Hot dog's a good feed.
It's... Don't rush it. 63, dear oh dear.
And Miki Sudo won the women's 40.
40?
Yeah.
40 hot
dogs. Both of them, they're not...
No, they're not big. They're not overweight at all.
Yeah.
Anyway, there you go.
They must take. There must be something. You just must straight out.
So, Racing HQ coming up very soon, boys. Saved their pup. Now, Kevin Ring is Kevin Ring's joining us. All jokes aside, this morning, what's happened in New South Wales racing in the last 48 hours? Awful, boys. With what we saw there with Leah at Grafton on Sunday, and then yesterday with Alyssa, who. So we've had on the program many a time on Racing HQ, and I've met Alyssa when we've been out to Dubbo. You wouldn't meet a better human. So some positive news this morning filtered through from Racing New South Wales. That would be my encouragement for everyone. There's a lot of stuff floating around on social media about the welfare of the two girls. My advice would be just wait for official stuff to come out via either Queensland Racing, the Jockeys Association, or Racing New South Wales, because... You don't want to be going off on the wrong tangent. So, speaking of the New South Wales Jockey Association, Kevin Ring is going to join us this morning, not only to talk about ways in which the association will help the two girls, but those around as well. If people were at the races yesterday and affected and just feeling a bit flat, like a lot of us are, there's ways in which the association can help. We'll chat with Andrew Adkins. There's no trials this morning. And it looks like there possibly may be no races tomorrow at Warwick Farm with what's going on, which is understandable. Again, we'll wait for everything to officially come through from Racing New South Wales. Richard Callender will join us. We've got Michael Beattie, a Grafton meeting today. So those postponed Grafton races that were meant to be on Sunday, they will now be on today. That will be our only New South Wales meeting after we lost Goulburn earlier today. We'll check in with David McComb and Cameron Crockett just on their Kosciuszko horses and looking ahead to that race. And then Paul Miller will join us from Club Rivers. They're opening a brand new tab on Friday called The Bunker. It's a new sports bar there at Club Rivers. So I'm going to be heading down and saying g'day to everyone. And we'll chat with Paul about other things they've done with the club. So Racing HQ coming up, boys, very, very soon. Take care on the roads, by the way. It is crazy out there, pup. Mido?
Agreed. Good on you, Dave. Thanks, DS.
All right, that's your Tuesday Big Sports Breakfast. All this morning's interviews coming up as well on the podcast, and we will touch base with them throughout the morning as well on Sky Sports Radio. As I said, we'll have a preview for racing at Grafton today after 10 o'clock with Gary Cleese. In the meantime, here's the news with Jamie.